this conversation about reading as a social justice issue. I'm Linda Diamond, president of CORE and author of the Teaching Reading Sourcebook. Throughout my career as an educator, I have seen the impact that poor reading skills has on overall academic achievement and the limited opportunities that are then available to young people if and when they graduate. More than 60% of people who are incarcerated in the United States are functionally illiterate. 85% of juvenile offenders have reading problems. Statistics like these make it undeniable that strong reading skills are critical for people to reach their full potential and be healthy, productive citizens. Jasmine Lane is a high school English teacher in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who, like me, sees literacy as a social justice issue. Though Jasmine wasn't necessarily taught the science of reading in teacher preparation, she's come to be a strong advocate for evidence-based reading instruction and writes frequently about equity and reading on her own blog, for Project Forever Free, in EdWeek, and other publications. I'm pleased to welcome Jasmine to join me in this conversation. Hi, Jasmine.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Well, you have an incredibly strong voice about your experiences as a high school educator. Can you tell us a bit about your personal journey and your focus on literacy as a social justice issue? What brought you here?
So a lot of my focus now and the things that I work on have to do with how I was taught in my own upbringing throughout K-12. I remember in the really early grades, I remember sitting on the carpet and doing the flashcards and like practicing blending words. I remember drilling my math facts, and I remember, you know, being taught like really explicitly, this is how you're going to succeed, and I'm going to teach you how to do it. And you know, throughout college, I eventually decided to become a teacher, and you know, people can read about me changing my mind about being a chemist. But so basically, because that was my experience with education, I wanted to make sure that students from my same background also had that, just because oftentimes people that come from my background, you know, I didn't grow up with money at all by any means. The schools in the neighborhood that I grew up, you know, they're in like the zip code, where, you know, you can make all those like negative assumptions, but like that didn't dictate my future. And so I want to make sure that wherever I teach, that that's, you know, the same concept for my students. But what I found is that not necessarily every student is getting that same experience that I did, with the teacher being very explicit. This is the standard that we're going to get to. This is how I'm going to get you there. And I've come to understand that it does have a lot to do with how we're trained to teach. And then because of, you know, our students' failure with those methods that we might use, that kind of warps our own understanding of our expectations. And that's why we get the low expectations coming in. And so that's, you know, that's what is just, is every student should get a great education, and that's not what's happening. And so that's why I put my focus there.
Why do you think that is? I mean, what is it that you think created this situation where teachers are not equipping kids with the skills to learn to read? And as a high school teacher, you're seeing it at the end of the line.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. My original plan was to be middle school, just because I knew, like, if these reading issues aren't addressed earlier on, they're just going to compound. And then, you know, you have an 11th grader and you're trying to teach, like, their eyes are watching God, and, you know, they struggle to decode the basic words. So it's harder to do that, but I still am able to do it. And I think, like I said, like, it starts in teacher prep. Like, even if you leave there and, like, you get these ideas about, like, what really matters and, like, how we learn, kind of, but it's really just all based on like what we think it should be. So like, let students be free, let them roam, let them, you know, love them, which is obviously important. Like, you need to care about your students, but there's very little attended to, like, this is how good instruction looks. And it's more just like figure it out as you go. And when you're a brand new teacher, you don't have like any instructional tools. You don't have curriculum. You're inundated with like, you know, lack of behavior plans in your school or whatever else. It just really, really overwhelms you. And so it's easy to get caught up in the whir of everything going on. And then your instruction kind of just falls by the wayside and you never really get to develop that. And then if you do end up sticking around, you know, maybe you're a 20-year veteran, like you found that what you do maybe works for half of your kids or maybe 40%, or maybe it doesn't at all. And you're just like, well, I love them anyway. I think that that kind of, all of those things compounded kind of mask our, you know, our, trying to find the right way to say it. They can kind of put a damper on what we think that students can do, just because we haven't been given the tools to really help students who might come in with, you know, maybe they don't speak English as a first language, or maybe they have learning disability or whatever else. For some reason, they're not at, you know, the certain level. And we haven't really been given the tools or the instruction ourselves to know how to move them to where we want to go.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm wondering also why there's resistance among teachers to also use evidence-based practices, even if they learn about them. And instead do things like use cueing system strategies, a more whole language, what might be called balanced literacy. What do you think causes that resistance, or have you thought about that?
Yeah, I mean, even in the upper grades, like there's evidence-informed practices for teaching reading outside of decoding, and people are resistant to those. And I think it has to do a lot with ego. Unfortunately, like as teachers in a lot of spaces, maybe we're not seen as like, you know, the professionals that we are. And so it's like, how dare you question what I'm doing? And so it becomes like a reflection on us as a person rather than like, can our students learn better than what we're doing? And so I think that our ego can really get in the way. And then also like if what you've done has worked kind of for some students, you know, like you might put the idea in your mind, like, well, they'll get it later or they'll catch up later without really understanding that they never really do. And so I think there's those two things. It's one, like you kind of kick the bucket and you're like, are they, you know, your standards might be like, are they good with their friends? You know, are they happy in class? And it's just like, that's not really what we come to school for. And so just kind of changing and shifting the main thing. Eric Kallen says this, he's a really, really smart education writer. And he's like, make the main thing the main thing. And so many schools don't have that. And the main thing for me as an English teacher should be, how can I have my students read rigorous literature? And that's not the main thing for a lot of schools right now.
That's very true. And we certainly see that. And I think sometimes educators may think that if I've got 40% of my kids doing well, it must be the kids or their homes for those who aren't learning.
Right. Yep. And that's again, like, it's like, okay, so, you know, 40% of my class is doing well. And they're from the same background as these other kids. So then why, you know, it's their home, or it's never the teacher. Because again, like it's the ego. It's like, I'm doing my best. How can you criticize me? And so I think that really gets in the way. And like, I understand, but like our job is to reflect and say like, is what I'm doing the very best that can be done? And the answer is always going to be no. Like I can always get better at something. I can always get better at questioning. I can always get better at chunking the text. And particularly in the earlier grades, if I'm a high school teacher telling you like, hey, because you taught this student to look at the picture and guess at the word, they came to my class and they guessed the word insidious, or sorry, they guessed the word insightful when the word was insidious. I'm telling you that this strategy you taught them 8 years ago is disrupting their ability to comprehend this text. And that was a real example. I've had a number of students who kind of just look at the first couple of letters and they guess. And I'm just like, we got to read through the word, you guys. And this was 10th and 12th grade. And it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, that was a good example, and that happens a lot. Now, I was very struck by the particular piece you wrote where you did directly link reading as a social justice issue, and you talked about your grandfather.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little about that and how you saw that, that connection?
I'm a Black woman in the United States of America. I have a history of slavery in my family. And if you know anything about that, you know that literacy was kept away from my people as a way to oppress them and to keep them, you know, you don't want to have the slave learning. And so like that is a big deal specifically for my community, for my family. And my own grandfather didn't learn how to read until his late 30s. Because when he was growing up, it wasn't seen as necessary. It was like you get to about third grade and he couldn't go to school anymore because he had to go work. So really all he could really do was just like sign his name, maybe do like basic things like that. But like having like full command of literacy, and like he was a very strong Christian man, wanted to read the Bible, and he couldn't. And so like that was another way to kind of keep that away from him, like keeping knowledge away. And so that's, you know, I take my strength from him and from my grandmother too. Like I am because they were. And that's, you know, education is just such a big thing for my people. And it's often people that aren't from my community telling us that, you know, things like reading well or like being proficient at math don't matter. And I really just push back on that and reject it. Because education is about 80% of white women, middle-class white women. And so that impacts what you think that your students can do. And I'm just here to say, like, there's nothing very exceptional about me. I didn't go to a private school. I didn't have private tutoring or anything like that. I went to a regular public school my entire life. I just happened to have teachers that believed in me and taught me and pushed me. And that's how I got to where I am today. And that's, you know, that's the issue. There are so many brilliant children all across this country, but they're just, there's no one, or there's very few people believing and teaching them to their potential. And that's the issue for me.
Yeah, that you've just said that so eloquently, and it has to be heard and said more. And that's an area that we're always trying to work. We work in probably the most disadvantaged schools in the country. We work with the Bureau of Indian Education, reservation schools, remote schools in Alaska, and urban schools with large populations of African American and English learners. And this is a message that we strive to convey. And you've just said it so eloquently. And because you have that personal experience, you're able to bring this into what you do. I'm curious, because we're now in this time of the Common Core standards where people are looking at core curricula to be the salvation for high school and just ensuring that if you have a great rigorous core, that that's all you need. What do you think is needed for students who are very far behind in high school? Is that sufficient? What would you do?
So Timothy Shanahan, he wrote a piece, someone questioned him and said, like, you know, if my 10th grader is reading a book that's at a fourth grade level, but they're completing 10th grade standards, like, is that like meeting the standards? And he said, no, you're meeting a fourth grade standard because you're reading a fourth grade text. So that's, you know, don't try to like fake your way into like doing difficult standards with an easy book. It's not the same. And then there's also some research around this, like how to kind of bridge that gap. If a student's like I had a student that was about sixth grade levels below reading level last year, and my class was really, really a struggle for him just because there was such a large gap between where he currently was and where he could have been. And if I had him the whole year, I might've been able to get him there. But like for students that are that far behind, but like their decoding is like kind of okay, then they would maybe need like an intervention class and then eventually move them back into the regular class. Like we don't want to just keep kids, you know, away from, you know, the powerful knowledge or like the really good books. Like, we don't want to dumb it down. And then, you know, there were some kids who probably had dyslexia or who just, you know, their reading was so broken. It was sounding like kind of like a broken like record player. And so those kids, again, like needing the intervention, but especially in the upper grades and in upper middle school, people just kind of say like, you just kind of get swept under the rug. And it's, you know, kids just stop reading anyway. And it's like, you just play the audiobook and there's just, you kind of just accept that kids are going to struggle to read. And that was kind of the message I got in teacher prep as well. It was just like, kids are going to struggle to read, so here's what you can do instead. And I think that just trickles into our schools, again, compounded with all of those other issues that you might encounter. And that's why the expectations get lowered the way that they do.
Yeah, so that sounds like it's a compensation strategy, that we're not going to really give them the skills they missed. We're just going to find ways to scaffold or compensate, but it's not necessarily going to make them independent readers.
Correct. Yeah, I think it's just like, well, they're not, if they haven't gotten there by now, it's something to do with them, or it's like because they're poor, because their home was hard. So let's just make sure that they feel good about themselves, even though it's not going to prepare them for life.
Wow. Well, is there anything else that you would like to say about your experience, about your view of these challenges? And but I really thank you for sharing this with us.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, in one of my first blogs, I said, like, I'm a progressive educator, and I don't agree with what most of my progressive colleagues are doing, because it's at odds with what most communities that they serve actually want. And so if you're a person that says Black Lives Matter, then that means that Black minds have to matter too. And I said that in my piece. I said Black literacy matters, Black grades matter, Black outcomes. If you're a teacher and you say Black Lives Matter, all of those things change a little bit when we're in a school setting. So, you know, you can go out and do a protest or whatever you want to do. That's great. But if you're not holding my kids to high expectations and high standards and pushing them to become independent, strong, brilliant learners, like they can be, then you are really just kind of, you're performing that, like, wannabe, like, faux progressive, whatever, and just kind of rethink, you know, who you're teaching and why you're doing what you're doing.
Well, that's a very positive, very powerful closing statement. And I'd like to really thank you, Jasmine, for joining me today and sharing your story of your journey and clearly your passion for teaching your students to be literate.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, they're just like me. I'm them. When I see my kids, I see myself. So I gotta give them what I had.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to continue your own learning about the science of reading, or are looking for resources to support your own professional learning or that of your staff, visit the CORE website, corelearn.com, where you'll find free on-demand webinars, articles, white papers, and a lot of connections to Jasmine's writings and much more. Thank you for tuning in.
From Cat in the Hat to reading a prescription label, from fractions to following a recipe, from writing an essay to writing a resume, what students learn in school impacts what they can achieve in life. At CORE, we believe that all students can become strong readers and master math. All it takes is teachers who have a deep knowledge of evidence-based instructional practices and ongoing support to implement them in their classrooms. CORE partners with schools and districts to help educators implement high-quality math and English language arts curricula, rigorous instruction, and effective assessment practices. By supporting teachers in their professional growth, we are ensuring that generations of young people learn to read, write, and do math so that all students, especially those who have been marginalized and traditionally underserved, can reach their full potential. Join us in our mission to help every teacher provide an outstanding education for each and every student. Learn more about CORE and our workshops, courses, and consulting services at corelearn.com.